There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you'll only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Hi, friends. Pastor Mike with you again today for this episode of WCN TV. Thank you so much for joining us today. You're going to love this conversation. And this is, it doesn't get any better for me personally. I get to talk with a sister in the Lord. I get to talk to an author. I love that. And I get to talk to an author whose wheelhouse is historical fiction. This is fantastic. Let me say this right out of the gate. I don't have much time to read historical fiction, but I absolutely love it. My wife Kathy, this is what she reads. This kind of subject and genre right there. So today I'm welcoming Kendi Pearson to the show. Welcome, Kendi.
Thank you for having me, Mike. I'm really happy to be here.
It is a pleasure and a blessing, Kendi. We have a mutual friend, someone that you're very, very familiar with, helped her in her writing, and she speaks very highly of you. So it's an honor for me to have you join us. how about if we just start, give a little bit of background of yourself, and I'll just start by saying you spent a lot of years teaching in the public school system. So maybe that would be a good place to start. And then lead us through that to what inspired you to become an author? Because, you know, that can be a pretty daunting thing.
Yeah, it can. It's basically my second career. And one little correction, I did not teach in the public schools. I taught in Christian schools.
Christian schools. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a pretty big difference among Christian schools even out there. Yeah, a lot. But that was my wheelhouse. That was where the Lord put me. And it was me. It fit like a glove. It was who I was. I was a teacher that got to teach the Bible and history and mathematics, all with from a creation point of view, yes, and from a biblical point of view, everything. And it was something I loved. I don't remember one day getting up and saying, oh, I've got to go to work today. It wasn't like that for me. It wasn't like that at all. And yes. So I came to a point after about, 28 years, I was an administrator at our little school. It was one of the different schools that I taught at. I was an administrator, and it got to the point where the board decided they were going to close the school. And I said, okay, Lord, what now? And so a big, huge Christian school needed somebody to fill in for history. I taught 6 history classes. So I taught the Civil War in 4 of them. And it was 9th through 12th grade, big class sizes, bigger than what I was used to, and so forth. And I did that for a year after that. And then I just felt like I'm lost. I couldn't deal with a big classroom of teenagers because I was hearing impaired. The first time I didn't pass my hearing test was when I was a senior in high school. And so by the time I was 30, I had hearing aids. My mother was severely hard of hearing, and my sister is profoundly hearing impaired and has two cochlear implants. And it's just, it's a very much of a hereditary degenerative thing. And anyway, I found myself in a situation where I felt like that the thing that I loved most, that was my ministry and who I was, I felt like it was being taken away from me. You know, it was a hard journey. And I subbed for a couple of years, and I kept saying, Lord, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? And, you know, it was just really neat the way he opened up writing. I was going to a Calvary Chapel at the time, and the pastor said, come be on my worship team. I'm doing a writer's conference. I didn't know anything about it, but I was a worship leader, and I majored in music in high school, in college. And I taught K through 12. That was my teaching credential, K through 12, music, band and choir. But he invited me along, and I went to that conference. I did the music part of it, but I got to go to all the workshops and everything for free and the coaching classes. And something came on in my head, and I'm like, I can do this, Lord. I can do this. So where I was at that place in my life where the Lord removed something from my path and said, Kendi, I want you on a different path. Nothing I'd ever planned. Nothing I'd ever planned. I wanted to be a missionary, and I wanted to design furniture. That's what I wanted to do. But when I went away to college, that's what I wanted to do. I went away to a Christian college. And those things just, they didn't come to fruition in my life. But anyway, yeah, so that's how I got started. Just, it was the Lord 100% putting me right where I needed to be for him to start the process he wanted to work inside of me.
Yeah, that's a remarkable story, Kendi, about how the Lord just kind of step by step moved you to a place where the light bulb came on and said, well, this is what I love. This is what I love to teach. Why not write about it? It seemed yes. So from a third party, it looks like a smooth transition, but I know it wasn't.
Yeah. No, it wasn't at all. In fact, my confidence had just been kicked. It was like, I'm always reminded of Paul, you know, and his thorn in the flesh. Well, that's what, for people that are hearing impaired, that is their thorn in the flesh. It takes away your confidence. Mm-hmm. It kind of pokes at everything you're doing in life. It attacks your feelings get hurt a lot. Your feelings get hurt a lot. People misunderstand you. You misunderstand them. It's a hard row to hoe, really. But I didn't have much confidence, so I started out just doing freelance. So, you know, writing articles and so forth. I have so many friends who just write freelance. They don't write books. You know, there's a whole lot of stuff out there to write. I even did some greeting cards. There is a lot of stuff, but I got plugged in to a system where I knew those resources and I knew how to submit stuff and what they were looking for. And they never would have gotten to that place without going to that first writer's conference. But yeah, so first I started out with freelance. I sold over 100 articles in 2 years. And then I thought, well, you know, my grandkids are toddlers. Let me write books for little kids. And so I did. I wrote books for little kids. I won an award coming right out of the gate. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is fun. Do I dare do what I really love? And that's a historical fiction. And it's got to be historical Christian fiction because that's who I am. I won't leave God out of the picture. So anyway, then that's when I started writing historical fiction. And once again, my first book, my goodness, I wrote it in January, edited it for several months, and in November it won an award right out of the bat. So, and then I got an agent right away. So God was saying, go, go, go. I'm opening doors. I'm opening doors.
Yes. So. Yeah. And from that, so folks, Kendi and I have a mutual friend, well, I'll say that you served as a mentor to her in many ways, and that's her testimony. And she has started here in Lima at our fellowship. She has started what we call the writing group. And so she has taken much of what she learned from you, and she is now applying that here to folks. And we've opened that up to the community. So we have, of course, several folks from the fellowship that attend these meetings, and it's open to the community. So we've had other folks participate in this as well. So I know you, this is a lead into the question. So I know that you teach writing principles, mm-hmm. and it's much more involved than most people understand. And I think that most people view it as this huge obstacle, this huge mountain that can't be overcome. And I'll let you address this, but I think if people understand, there's a very, very simple way to look at it structurally and how the flow. And so I'll just let you answer this question. What is involved? And I even wrote down the name, Introduction to Writing for Publication. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll let you speak to that.
In doing all of my writing, part of what I did was write curriculum for Sunday school classes. And all my background in teaching, my brain is very organized as far as, you know, first did this and then learned this, then learned this. And I started taking all the stuff I was learning and I worked on putting that into it's a group of classes. I've forgotten how many there are now. I want to say 10 of them or 8, 9 of them. Anyway, they're right for publication, because writing for publication is not, you know, senior lit, you know, writing or creative writing in high school. That is not it. When you're writing for publication, they're looking for a lot of different things, whether you're writing little articles or, you know, for a Sunday school paper or a novel. There are different requirements. And so I put together a multi-part basically, it's a whole series of workshops, and they're each about an hour long. And you know, it's just a presentation with a bunch of examples, and sometimes people get to work on it while they're doing it. And I kind of went to a whole lot of libraries around the state and taught some at writers conferences, and it was just fun. It was a lot of fun, and I did that while I was working on other publications. You know, even before I had a published novel in any way, shape, or form, it was all those other things I'd been doing that gave me, you know, what I needed to teach them. And it was teaching adults. Teaching adults is far, far different. I'm like, Lord, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can handle the classroom situation again with, you know, things. But it's different with adults. Adults are different. Adults don't cover their face when they're talking to you and mumble. And, you know, I'm just saying it's a lot different. And they're very forgiving and very kind about things. And it was a lot of fun. I've had people that have gone through the entire series more than once because there's just so much there. And then I also got involved with NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month, where they encourage you to write a novel in a month, only a very short novel. It's just kind of the skeleton of your novel. But and so I taught a series of classes on that.
Yeah. So. Kenny, what are your thoughts concerning reading and writing in America? Is it in decline, or and due to electronic media, computers, tablets, whatever the case might be, is it in the decline, or do you think that we're in a period of time where that's starting to increase? What are your thoughts on that?
Wow. Okay. Well, I've been watching this for quite a while. My oldest graduated from high school in 2001, and she brought home a research paper, and the teacher gave her an A on it, and I would have given her a C. Right. I went to talk to the teacher, and the teacher's like, well, we're not concerned about spelling because there's always spell check. That was 2001. So it has been evolving. It really has been evolving. And I see things that are scary. I think it's going to be assisting. People are being dumbed down.
Yeah.
And I think this lack of proper teaching for reading, writing, and arithmetic, they're depending on the computers for everything in one way or another. And they're not requiring much of the kids. And if you don't require much from them, you're not going to get anything more from them. Yeah. To whom much is required, much is expected. So yeah. I just feel like it is definitely, definitely in decline. And I'm always shaking my head. And I look at my grandchildren. I've got one in public school and three that are homeschooled. And I'm concerned. You know, I'm very, very concerned about where this is going, what we've done to our education system. In my state right here, they have now removed the graduation requirements for graduating seniors. So you can bet that most of the seniors that are coming out can't even pick up my book and read it. They'll get the audio book.
Yeah.
If they're interested enough. So.
Well, that I guess if it has to be that way, and I don't think it has to be that way, but that's the trend, I guess, is what I'm saying. What I've discovered over the years, Kendi, is that reading causes you to think more deeply than what you normally would. It causes you to think analytically. You've got to figure out, okay, how are these characters interacting, and you start thinking about the plot line, and it develops those skills. Reading is a wonderful discipline, and I think that's part of the reason why it's gone by the wayside, and we see the results of that. So I was just curious about your take on that, what you've seen, especially with all those years of teaching high school.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Discipline. It's a discipline. Mm-hmm. That's a dirty word. People think discipline means spanking your child. They don't know. I'm sorry. Anyway, I just feel like discipline is sadly, sadly lacking, and it is not encouraged in many different places, in the workplace, in the school, all over. You can apply it. You need discipline in every area of your life in one way or another. You really do. And that doesn't really necessarily come naturally for most people. They need someone along to teach them and mentor them and encourage them. Mm-hmm. And that's why we used to have, you know, what you call negative and positive reinforcement, right?
Yes, that's right. Well, it's on the screen for our viewers, When the Mountains Wept, and perhaps subtitled West Virginia, Born of Rebellion Storm. You know, I can say I have never seen a book that dealt with anything dealing with West Virginia. What inspired you to pick West Virginia of all places? And it was interesting to me because my mother's family is from West Virginia. So anyway.
Okay. Yeah, it's your neighboring state.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think the main thing is I knew I wanted in my first historical novel, I wanted to write about the Civil War because I ate up every Christian fiction on Civil War and a few that weren't Christian. I just really loved it. I loved it dearly as far as the topic. And that's what I wanted to write about. And you need to, one of the things you learn when you're writing a novel, you have to write what hasn't been done. Don't write on something that somebody else has done and somebody else. If there's 30 books on West Virginia in the Civil War that are historical novels, don't do it. Right. So I'm like, having studied the Civil War so much, I have to find where there was the most clashing for the people that lived there. Do you remember the old movie Shenandoah?
Yes.
With Jimmy Stewart?
Yes.
Okay. They lived in the Shenandoah Valley. And so I'm thinking a family, what environment will affect the family the most? And so I narrowed it down. Between, first of all, Missouri. People think of the Missouri Compromise. Missouri was one of those states that allowed slaves, but they didn't secede. They allowed slaves, but they did not secede. So they had like a dual government going on with the union, with the Confederacy and the United States. So I thought, Missouri. And I looked it up, and there'd been several novels written about that area and for that purpose. So I do more research and I find out West Virginia. I did not know this. I grew up in the Midwest. I did not know that West Virginia was part of Virginia until halfway through the war. And then they split. And they split all because of the whole reason people seceded, etc. So I needed to find the most contested piece of real estate. And this is it. And this is it during the war. It really was literally brother against brother. And that's what I wanted to portray in this book. I did not divide up my family, but it was, you know, the dearest of friends fighting for the other side. The next book is even much more so. And I also wanted something different than what I'd read before. I had not read a whole lot about guerrilla warfare and bushwhackers and so forth. And my book two in the series deals a lot with that. So I just feel like the Lord led me to this little niche, you know, where I hadn't, since I'd done so much studying about Civil War, I missed this. I missed this main thing that I'm covering in this series of books. So yes, that's why I picked it. It really affected the common man, the farmer, right there.
Did you research, Kendi, right down to what some of the prominent family names were in that area?
Yeah, I kind of don't know how to do things halfway. I researched the names of the big plantation owners with the most slaves. For example, James Hill is the protagonist in this, the male protagonist in this first book. And Hill was the family that owned the most slaves in Virginia. Now remember, they're all still part of Virginia on the other side of the mountains there. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I did. I took people's names that were, you know, slave owners. I looked up slave names. I looked up local names. I wanted people in West Virginia to read this and recognize some of these names. I just tried for as much authenticity as, and that's one of the things I teach. One of my workshops is called Writing a Historical Novel. You need to look up the fauna, the flora, the fauna, the seasons, not just the landscape. And there's a tremendous amount of research. But yeah, the names, those were definitely a thing that I really was wanting to use. I didn't pull them out of my head, except for my maiden name is McLaughlin. I had to have an Irishman in there named McLaughlin. So I did that. I don't think I really borrowed any other names. Everything was names I found historically.
Yeah. And this is book one. So how many, book two is out already?
Book two will be out in the fall.
In the fall. Okay.
In the fall. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's still same location, same.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the whole series takes place, basically, it's a farm family who's really been torn by this war happening right on their front doorstep, literally. They even have a graveyard that has the graves of both Northern and Southern dead. And each book features one of the children, one of the adult children as the protagonist. And this one starts out with the oldest girl. And then the next one is the oldest boy, and then it goes down the line. So, and then I'm thinking, I've had so many people comment on a couple of individuals in this book that they would love it if I'd write a prequel of how those two individuals met.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, well, Star Wars did it.
It
kind of came out later. I don't know when it was written, but it came out after the mm-hmm. one we all grew up.
Yep. So, and did you say there's three planned books in this series?
No. Well, if I did the prequel, it'd be six. But there's five because there's five Dabney children in the book.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's a question then. If there's five planned, do you do any brainstorming for each volume, what it is that you want to cover or include in that? Because that, to me, plotting that out, okay, I'm going to have five books in the series. I'd have to have a little bit of meat to the bones on each one, what I was going to mm-hmm. cover, or it seems like you'd just be kind of out there.
Well, I've written through the third book, and the war ends at the end of the third book. And so at this point, I'm thinking about books four and five. I'm thinking about the mining wars. I'm thinking about the Western expansion. So I'm broadening my research just a little bit, but for the most part, I'll keep them in the area. And I'm not positive yet, but I got to add, I won't be adding meat to those bones for a while, but yeah, I have to get it. And you know, what happens is I make a framework based on my research, like, oh, I want this in there. Oh, I want this there. And I make a timeline, and then I work on the characters, and the characters all have their own arc, the character arc. So I need to take the character arc and I have to combine it with a story arc, so that whatever is going on inside the character mirrors what's going on inside the story. As far as if there's conflict, make it hard on them, and then what do they learn from it? That kind of, so there is a dual arc going on there, and I really have to concentrate on each character. What do I put them through, and what do they learn? And yeah.
Well, and that's part of the reason why you're writing in this genre, Christian fiction. I've heard our friend call it clean, and that carries viewers won't know what that means, but explain what that means in the context of your writing in this genre when we say, okay, well, this is clean.
Okay, well, it is, in today's environment, I would say 90% of the books you pick up, if they're fiction, they're not clean. And they will have words and circumstances, situations in there that are, I find, very offensive. It depends on the person. If you're like me and you're sensitive, you're not going to get something unless it says it's clean. In my research for, I have another series about the Chinese on the West Coast, about Chinese workers and how they were treated and so forth. But in my research with that, I read a novel that had been done on the same subject. It was filthy. It was awful. I have only read Christian fiction for so many decades. I didn't realize how awful it had become. And then I read also a General Market, not secular, but it's called a General Market book. So there's a Christian Market and the General Market. And so I read a General Market book on the Civil War, and that was equally as offensive. So that's why a lot of times, I know there's several like reviewers out there and so forth that say clean and Christian. They kind of lump them together. And when somebody says, well, what is Christian fiction? Because the first thing you learn is not to be preachy. It's don't. A novice might do that. A novice might write a book that they think is Christian, and they get a little, you know, sermon in there, and you know, it's just like trying to teach a lesson through the whole book or something. And that definitely does not work. That's a big no-no. So clean is probably no spiritual arc to it, but there needs to be a takeaway for almost everything. But it depends on what that, it just looks different depending on the genre. But for clean, yeah, it's not going to have LGBTQ stuff. It's not going to have swear words, questionable romantic situations, etc. So and there's a good market for that. But there are some people who really don't want anything to do with God. They don't want anything that says the word Christian on it. I can give you an example. I was at a book signing at what used to be in my town close by, a nice little bookstore with lots of books. And it was just, you know, and I haven't been in there in a few years, but I thought, well, I'll do a book signing there on a special occasion that they had, right? And one person did say, he looked at it and he said, Christian, how can the Civil War be Christian? So see, he had no idea there was something called Christian fiction. And he might not, I suspect he didn't know there was such a thing as clean fiction. But so in a nutshell, what I say to people like that is, well, I said, there's a good takeaway, good spiritual arc, and it is clean. It is very clean. So it's hard. It's like when you read the book, do you feel like it was without violence?
Well, no. I mean, how could you? That'd be impossible.
Yeah. How do you write about such a heart-wrenching time without people dying and people, you know, the violence and the death and it's just, I don't know. I I think there's a lot of people that are skeptical and they won't pick up something if they know it's Christian. I had one person said, well, what's your book about? And I said, well, it's Christian historical fiction. And I saw her body language. She stepped away when I said the word Christian. She stepped away. This was a college age girl. And so that's kind of the environment that we're in. And writing for the Christian market is its own very tiny niche to write for. And but clean is good. Clean, you're still going to hopefully have a good story. Clean is what they would have been, what we were reading when we were in like A Farewell to Arms, you know, Ernest Hemingway stuff.
Yes.
And I don't know, even nowadays with some of the movies, my husband and I watched a movie. I don't remember what it was, a few months ago, but we had to turn it off because that's not the movie we remember watching, because we saw it like on TV or in the movies decades ago. And they have, it's an unedited version, you know, so, but clean is important. And, you know, writing books for Christian families is so important because people need to know that they can give their children, whether they're homeschooling or private school or public school, they can give their children the opportunity for a good reading and learning experience without being afraid of what's in it. So if it's labeled clean, you could pretty much trust it. But I think it's very wise to read a book before your child reads it, no matter what their age is. Very, very wise.
Yeah.
So because there's certain things are sneaking in there. Even Christian publishers will publish stuff that I think should not be in Christian books in the environment that we are right now in the United States.
Yeah.
So we need to be careful out there. Clean is important. Clean is necessary. We need it. Christian fiction. We need Christian fiction. We need authors that write it.
You can tell a good story without all of that other.
That's right. That's right. How many times have you been watching a movie and you're like, ooh, they didn't need to put that in there.
Yes.
It did nothing. It did nothing but garnish a rating. That's all it did.
That's right. That's exactly right. So you talked about the Christian market and of course that today, I think you would probably agree with this. Christian market is pretty broad. You've already said there are things that Christian publishing houses are printing that's, I don't know why they would do that. But well, it's money.
You know, I think, yeah, you're exactly right. It's money because they are a business trying to make money. It's not a ministry. It's not a ministry to them. Now, there are still a handful of good sized publishing houses out there that do look at it as a ministry, and they are doing a good job at being gatekeepers for that kind of thing. So yeah. I remember when I first started Revel, you could not have anybody drinking any liquor for any reason. Yeah. And I had a friend who turned in a manuscript and the guy was drinking some alcohol. He was like a bad guy, right? And he was drinking alcohol and they said, could you switch that to apple cider? Now, this was probably 13 years ago, but it just floored me. So there are still, it wouldn't be that way today, I'm sure. But yeah, there's still people out there that are in it more for the ministry than the money.
Yeah, yeah. So how difficult, because I think I have 30, maybe 30 books that I've published. But they're all self-published, so I've got total control. Most of them are commentaries on books of the Bible, but I've probably got a dozen that are standalone commentary on cultural issues and things of that nature. So it's real easy for me to do that because I have total control. But how difficult is it to have a Christian publisher actually take a look at your manuscript and say, oh, I love it, we're going to publish it? Do you get more rejections? Typically, do you get more rejections than you do acceptance?
Yeah, it's a whole different thing. In fact, they said, what was it about 8 years ago or 7 years ago, the Christian publishing market turned over, and all of a sudden it became much harder to get published with a traditional house where they pay you royalty and they take care of everything. All you do is turn in your manuscript and take care of your edits later when they send them to you. It is hard. There's some numbers out there. They probably have changed, but you have a 1 in 100 chance of getting noticed. And then you've got a small chance of getting chosen. I've been to, like a pub board or an editorial committee in big houses 3 times. And they still, my Civil War series, twice I heard I heard it from several people, but twice from major publishers. Civil War is not selling. So it's got to be, you got to think of it. Yes, even if they're doing it for a ministry, they have to be able to know that this is sellable. So they're looking for some things, and it's much harder to get published as a Christian author than it is in the general market, because the general market has so many more people, so many more publishers. Yes, there's more writers, but it's disproportionate. There's a lot of Christian writers out there. And these Christian publishing companies, some of them were bought. They were swallowed up in a couple of the big five a few years back. And that was hard. But the thing that is very important is that you understand from their point of view, it may be the best story in the world, but they have some requirements. First of all, are you the author able to help market this book? Are you in a big enough name? Are you well enough known? Do you have enough friends on social media? Do you have something in your life that will help you be able to sell books? That's what they really like to see happen. And number two, they would like to know that this book is sellable. This is why when you put together a proposal, you have to list all these comps, these comparable titles, so they can look and see, are these books selling? And how is your book like it? And how is it not like it? And you have to literally, they have to be convinced that there is a market for that book. There has to be a market for that book. And one of the things I ran into is our historical fiction slots are filled for the next four years. Wow. Because with traditional publishing, you have to wait a long time to see your book. Usually it's around 2 years in the Christian publishing industry, maybe a year and a half with some of the smaller publishers out there. But they have slots. They sit down in a big meeting and they have slots. They're like, okay, in 2025, we're going to do this many romance books and this many historical fiction, this many historical romance, this many fantasy or speculative, and this many YA of this genre and that genre. And so they have all these slots to fill. If they don't have a slot open for your book for the next 2 or 3 years, they're not going to say, they'll say, listen, if you still haven't published, come back again in 2 years and let's take another look at it. That's what you'll hear. So you're at the mercy of the whole industry. Those three things have to line up. Are you the author for them? Do I have a book slot available? Is there a market for this particular book? So, yeah, it's tricky. It is tricky.
Well, I'm it's not for everybody, but I'm glad I just did the self-publishing route, because I don't have the patience for that, Kendi. That would send me over the edge if I had to wait 2-3 years. It's like, no, this is relevant now. I want this information and material in people's
hands. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was actually, I signed with an agent after I hadn't even written my second book yet. And for 5 years, she was trying to sell these, and she kept telling me, write more books. And I started teaching workshops to get my name out there. I had a very nice platform compared to most new authors. But no matter what, that book, it would go to the pub board or the editorial committee, and they'd say, Civil War isn't selling. And so she goes, well, write something completely, totally different. And so back in, 2020, January, I wrote something completely different. I started another series, a different time, different place in the United States. kind of the same. I write from the heart of history, so I find the nitty gritty things in history that normal people don't know about. That's kind of my branding. But I did that. I wrote another one, and I'm submitting that. She's like, oh, this is wonderful, and submitted it to a couple places. And it was so different. There was really no market for it, and they had clamped down. We don't have any place available. We don't have any open slots. So then I pouted for a year, and I'm like, Lord, now what? This is what you had me on. I did the freelance stuff. I was successful at this, the children's stuff. And now this, what do I do? And I just felt like he spoke to me at a conference last summer. And for the first time ever, that conference had several presentations and a daily coaching shop on self-publishing. And so I felt the Lord was telling me, be fruitful. John 15:16. I chose you. You did not choose me. I chose you to go out and bear fruit and to bear it abundantly so that your fruit will continue coming. And the Lord just grabbed me just by the collar with that verse. And I have been fruit bearing all my adult life. I've been used by the Lord in ways that just humble me so much. And I felt like, now what? So this is daunting. I'm going to do this. And I went ahead and started my own publishing company. My press name is it's called Pear Blossom Books, because we have a little orchard. We've got 4 pear trees and 4 apple trees, and I watch those things bear fruit. I watch them blossom. I watch them go through the hard winters. We've got one tree that it's a Gravenstein tree, and if we get a late frost, forget the apples. So yeah. We get apples from that tree like once every 3 or 4 years because of that. But when it bears fruit, it does. It does. Even if something has frozen its buds, its ability to flower and make those pears, it still bears fruit. Yes. And I felt like that was me. And I'm like, okay, Lord, I'm going to dive in. And it has been a tremendous amount of work because, like I said, I don't know how to do anything halfway. And so that takes, can I talk about the difference between publishing traditionally?
Oh, yes, please. Yes.
Okay. So publishing traditionally, you do have to do a bunch of marketing and try to sell your book. I mean, they want you to do a certain amount, but they set up all kinds of publicity for you. They do a bunch of marketing. There's a budget. Sometimes you have a publicity person. But they're paying for a lot of the marketing, and they also do the editing, all the book covers, everything that needs to be done for a book. They do it all, and then they send you edits so you could sit there once they've edited it and you say yes or no, or yes or no, you know, if you want this edit to happen or whatever. And that's basically your role as an author. And while you're waiting for them to do all this, you go ahead and you write other books without a care in the world. But when you're indie publishing, you are in charge of making sure that book cover gets designed, making sure the formatting is done, making sure the professional editing is done. And then once that book finally is able to come out, you need to let the world know. So now you're in charge of all the marketing and all the publicity, all the reviews, getting your CCLI, CCLI, that's for music, the Library of Congress number and your copyright and certain professional, like Library Journal. There's just a lot to it. So if you actually want the book to sell, you got to be your own everything that a traditional publisher does, but the control over it is very rewarding. Also, you get your monetary rewards right away. With a traditional publisher, they may give you they may or may not give you an advance up front. And then you gotta wait a year or two until that book comes out before you start getting royalties, and you don't get any royalties until your advance has been paid off. So you won't get anything up until you've earned enough royalties to match your advance. If they give you a $5,000 advance, you've got to earn $500 or $5,000 worth of royalties before you see another penny. Yes. So while they sell more books, you get a lot littler bite of it. When you sell the book yourself, you're getting a much bigger chunk of each book. So it's kind of like, do you want to sell, 10,000 of this book and get $1 for each, or do you want to sell 500 of this book and get $7 each? You know, it just there's a real, so it's a big thing.
Yes. So brings up another question or two. So Pear Blossom Books, have you considered, so that's your publishing company, and mm-hmm. Art of History is an imprint under that publishing house. Have you considered publishing other authors' work? So under Pear Blossom.
I have been asked that several times. Down the road, if the Lord wants me to, I'm certainly willing to do that. And I have another imprint for, I have 7 children's books. And Light for Littles is the name of that imprint. So thus far, I have 2 imprints planned. It would be really great to get a YA imprint going, because YA books that are clean and Christian are they're so needed right now for our youth.
Yes.
Books that they can dive into and not say, "Phew," you know, and just anyway. So yeah, but I've set it up for that, and you know, did the business name registration and all that, and got the proper licensing, because I don't know what God's got planned down the road.
Yes.
I just don't know. So I'm set up for that in case I need to.
Yes. One other question that's it just piqued my curiosity when I heard you say it. You mentioned the Library of Congress catalog number. Is that something that you apply for, or are you approached about, hey, we want to?
Yeah, no. No, it's one of the myriad of connections you have to make to publish the book, but it is not required. The LCCN number is not required, but if you want libraries to carry your book, you need to have an LCCN number.
Mm.
So, and I definitely do, because I am marketing to the libraries of West Virginia, especially. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like this is an important addition to what libraries are carrying.
Yes. Yeah, that's absolutely true. So would you serve as an agent for authors?
No. An agent is somebody who takes your book and finds a home for it.
Yes,
they
right.
submit it. And I have done, I'm sure, well over 100 submissions. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's very time consuming. It's a lot of work. Even if you kind of cookie cutter all of your emails and so forth, you still have to research the place you're sending it to, know exactly what they're looking for. And I would not want to be an author. I mean, an agent. I would not want to be an agent.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So you don't think the Lord is leading to a full service thing? You're not going to do the agent part. How about editing?
I did all my own editing. Yeah. I've been doing editing for other people for the last several years.
Okay.
And when I started this whole thing, I did not have the money for an editor. There is a professional book person who does it all. She's got a degree in publishing, I believe. She lives in West Virginia. She designed my book cover. And her and I connect. She's one of those people God dropped into my life. We connected way back when I wrote the first book. It still had lots of mistakes in it, because I went back and, you know, found all those mistakes. But she said, "Oh, I'm in West Virginia. I want to read your book really bad. Would you mind if I looked at it? Could I read it?" And I'm like, "Oh, okay, sure." I sent her the PDF. And she really liked it. And she sent me a message every now and then to say, "Your characters are still in my mind. When are you going to get that published?" But she's a professional editor and book cover designer and formatter. And she does everything. She's a full service place. And anyway, so I hired her to do the book. And she told me, "No, you don't need a developmental edit on it," because she happened to have read it. So that meant, okay, I could do the edit for the basic edit. There's a lot of different kinds of edits, and a person needs to educate themselves on that. But one of the two important things is, you know, have your book cover professionally designed and have a professional edit on it for the story arc, for the everything. Okay, so a complete comprehensive type of edit. And anyway, so no, it's, yeah. And I did a big no-no. They say, "Don't edit your own book." But I figured, man, I've done it for so many other people. I'm going to go ahead and do this. Yeah. So we'll see. It's a big investment. And so for me, that was a factor when I was just starting out. But the Lord has been blessing me like crazy since I started this. So I know his favor is on me at this point.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Kendi. So if we've got somebody, they may or may not contact you, but somebody is listening to this conversation, and they've always had in the back of their mind, it is, I would really like to be able to express myself in writing, whether it's poetry or whether it's a novel, whatever the case might be. What would you tell them? What would you recommend to them as far as starting on that journey? What would that look like if they're saying, I just don't know where to begin. I don't even know. How would I start? What would you tell them?
Well, I would say the first thing you do is go to a writing group of some sort. So you're rubbing shoulders with and listening, learning the lingo. You know, you kind of starting to get an idea of what's going on. Get involved in a big writers group, you know, like ACFW or we have CCW. There's a lot of them out there. You could even go online. And if you're looking for a Christian writers group, or not writers group, but an organization, you just search Christian writers organizations in the United States, and you'll be amazed. I would say join one of those, go to a conference. Conferences are, they're like a crash course, and usually you get all of the slides. You know, you can, at home, you can restudy the information when you want to, or you can get the audio. And so definitely get tied in with professional writing organizations and a local writing group. And then I would suggest buying a Christian Writers Market Guide if you're in the Christian market. Otherwise, there is a Big Fat Writers Guide. And it's a market guide is what I'm getting at. It's a Christian Market Writers Guide. And it will show you all the different places you can write for. I highly suggest that people start writing freelance, because you will learn a lot about how I'll just put it this way. It will, by fire, you will learn how much writing for publishing is not like just writing, like writing a research paper or a letter or whatever. There's a lot of tricks about it, but I would definitely suggest that. So a writer's market guide, and get involved with everyone. And then just start, go out, talk to people, pick their brains, say, what do you write? How did you get started? What did you do? And then start being brave enough to allow people to look at your work and critique it and tell you what somebody who knows what they're talking about, somebody who's been, you know, selling stuff and making some money. So you know that they do know how to write good stuff, and get their opinion on it. Yeah. I think that's the best thing I could recommend. Too many people try to go it alone. And it's like I want to be a doctor. I want to be a physician, but no, I don't want to go to medical school. No, I'm not even going to go to college. No, if you want your outcome at the end of the line to be this, you've got to go through all the steps to get there, because it really is a learning curve to learn some of the different things in writing for publication. Sentence formation changes. There's all kinds of stuff, because guess what? We are writing for, probably you are writing for a different audience than who you were when you were reading other people's writing when you were, say, you know, in school or whatever. So we're writing for readers who have usually shorter attention spans, depending on what genre you're writing or what articles you're writing or for what newspaper. You need to learn to take a big long sentence and reduce it down into a little sentence. You know, the first thing that you could try doing is, if somebody wants a 150 word article on pumpkins, maybe you're like, oh, they're going to pay $50 for 150 words about pumpkins. I'm going to try it. Well, do your best, write it down, and then shrink it down to 150 words. You learn a lot when you force yourself to shrink stuff, but that it makes a big difference. It really does. But yeah, that's where I would say start. You get the support, get the you know, the market guide, because it will show you what's out there that you can write.
Yes.
And there's a lot of free stuff online, free resources. You can listen to podcasts, author media podcasts. There's a Christian publishing show. There's a tremendous amount of free stuff out there that you can learn. And just be a student again. Be a student, take notes, watch things over and over, and you'll be amazed. You'll just be amazed.
Yes. Great response, Kendi. Great response. So are your books available through your website?
I'm not doing any direct selling yet. I hadn't really wrapped my brain around that to get it going yet. Mm-hmm. But they're available worldwide. So any place you check should be able to order it for you. It may not be in your local bookstore, but they can sure order it.
They can sure order it, yeah.
Yeah, the ebook is available at all those places that it's showing there.
Yes, very good, very good. When the Mountains Wet, book one is the subject, and we've talked all around that about the discipline of writing, everything that's included in that, and hopefully, friends, I'm hoping that this kind of jump started you. If you've thought about writing in the past, the world needs Christian writers who can present the truth of God and moral principles. Our children need it, that's for sure. Well,
that's right.
Kendi, I am so appreciative of you joining us here today on WCN-TV. Thank you very, very much. I've enjoyed our conversation.
You betcha. You bet. Thank you so much for having me, Mike, and I hope you'll invite me back.
I sure will do that. We'll keep in touch, and I'll probably be sending you an email once we get off of the show here.
Okay. That sounds great.
Friends, that's all we've got for you today on this edition of WCN-TV. Please share this with your friends, especially those in your family or in your circle of friends that are interested in writing. Perhaps they're writing even now. This would be a good show to help them bring their thoughts together about what it's going to take to be successful. Appreciate all of you joining me. God bless you all. We'll see you next time here on WCN-TV.